Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. We are so lucky to have another amazing guest joining us today. Melissa, it is so great to have you on the podcast, finally. Oh. It is so awesome. I always love to have folks introduce themselves, so if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to have you introduce yourself to our listeners.
Sure. I've so been looking forward to this, and before I intro myself, I just want to make it very clear. There were three separate people who came to me and were like, you got to meet Stephanie. You got to meet Stephanie. You got to meet Stephanie. And then I feel like those same three people were saying to Stephanie, you got to meet Mel. You got to meet Mel. You got to meet Mel.
Yes. Yes.
So eventually we met, and here we are. I am an organizational psychologist, former mental health therapist, and author of the snippy book behind me. Yes, you can talk about mental health at work. Here's why and how to do it really well. I teach businesses, leaders, and individuals how to have constructive and realistic conversations about mental health, team dynamics, and communication in the workplace. And my clients range from really large organizations like Google, Dow Jones, Estee Lauder, to medium-sized organizations like Orlando City Soccer Club, to teeny tiny, you know, mom and pop companies and everything in between. And my husband likes to joke that companies seem to pay me to yell at people and make jokes about mental health, but it is much more than that. I just want to embed these conversations in the world of work, really from the perspective of skills-based professional development. This is so much more than mental well-being and mental wellness. This is about teaching people a language we all need to know how to speak. And I am trying to do that.
Amazing. So Ta-da! Excited. So excited to have you on board. And I mean, obviously, we have a similar passion for changing the way we work, changing the way we talk about mental health at work. So I am super thrilled to kind of dive in and dive into this conversation for our listeners. I would love to start with, you know, you've got an interesting background.
Oh, thank you.
I mean that as a positive, to be clear. Thank a you. Good, interesting.
You're like, oh, interesting. That could go either way sometimes.
Interesting.
Right?
No, clinical mental health. That is, it's interesting not to reuse the same word. I would love if you would share a little bit more about your background and maybe what inspired you to write your book.
So I often make the joke, and please forgive the joke. I am married to someone in tech. So I often use little jokes as like a nod to that. I make the joke that I went from the back end to the front end because I used to be, you know, the clinical therapist that people would come see in the office, in private. And now I've gone to opening up those conversations in the workplace, which is as front end as it can get. Yeah. And so, you know, when I was in clinical mental health, oh my God, it's like 11 years ago now. It's a lot of time that's passed. And I remember, and I do not regret at all getting my master's in counseling psych and, you know, doing counseling at a university employee assistance program. Use your EAP, by the way, which by the way, also, even if you work in HR, please use your EAP. It's not just telling other people it exists, but also you should use it as well. And I remember, and also working in group practice, and I thought to myself, I feel like I'm treating people in a broken system and a broken narrative. And they talk to me, which is great. They might talk to their friends, which is great. They're not talking to anybody else. And a lot of my clients were telling me that they also felt like their workplace cultures were torturing them to begin with. So I thought, let me make an impact at the source. Let me see if I can, you know, transition out of clinical into organizational psychology, which is really not something people did 10 years ago. I had no help. I did it myself because back then it was like stay in your own lane. But now, you know, everybody and their mother who's in clinical is transitioning into org psych because it is so translatable in terms of skills and everything. So I transitioned into org psych, very traditional stuff, you know, director of people and culture development, leadership development manager. And I still do a lot of that work, where it's executive coaching, it's emotional intelligence, you know, how to share your toys with each other and don't be a dick at work, you know, that sort of stuff. I love doing those topics and I still do. But whenever I would say the words mental health, people would like proverbially hiss at me. And I was like, well, that's weird. Like, why you have to make it weird? And so fast forward, I moved to London with my husband. I'm on a, you know, people in leadership development contract. And they said, you used to do clinical mental health. Could you do a mental health awareness campaign? I was like, oh my God, yes, I can. And it just took off from there because their internal workshops typically have 10, 11, 12 people. 75 people showed up. And I was like, oh, we have hit on something here. Mm-hmm. And so I did duplicates. And then I got in touch with this English training company. And then they wanted me to do a video series. And it just kind of built from there. And the market was telling me what it needed. It was telling me. And I was responding. And then after having done a bunch of speaking gigs in the UK, and I was like really, really focusing. And I was like, there's no resource to tell people how to actually have the conversation, because we're saying it's important. We're telling people to do it. We're teaching them what it is. No one's teaching them how to have the conversation. So I saw somebody on LinkedIn who had gotten like a book deal with a well-being related publisher. And I was like, let me just pitch. Let me see what happens. And I pitched it and then they liked it. And I was like, oh shit, I have to write it now.
That's how it goes, right? Oh, shit. Oh, crap. Now I got to do this.
I was like, oh no. Oh no. Now I actually have to do it. And if it wasn't for my editors, you know, I may be like I always get twingy saying this. I may be like a thought leader in this topic. I'm not an expert on how to write a book about it. Not at all. So they helped it be the actionable thing it is, a playbook that anyone can pick up regardless of tenure, position, industry, company, and develop the skill further on how to talk about mental health or support other people about mental health at work. And so that's really that whole long-winded journey that led me to writing the book, is the market was telling me what it needed. And then when I realized there wasn't like an all-in-one guide, I was like, well, if no one else is doing it, I guess I should. And here we are.
It really is. I have to compliment the book because it really is so accessible. It's so wonderful for a book about mental health, emotional intelligence, empathy. Like the books that are like, you can pick it up. Here, I'll even show you. See? I'm not blowing smoke. Genuinely, this is a really accessible book. And one thing that I think is important to me as I'm doing my work, and part of the reason I do the work I do, is a lot of the conversations we have about psychology or the brain are really inaccessible for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
It's very like I just downloaded Stephen Porges's new article. Not very many people want to read that. I do because I'm a nerd, but what also gets me excited, I'll send you the article if you haven't seen it yet. But what is exciting to me is being able to make this really amazing information that can help so many people, easy to use and accessible.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
So I have to just like extremely compliment you on that. I see so many people write books that are either not impactful or are not accessible. And you have managed to write one that is impactful and accessible. So kudos to you.
I really appreciate it.
And for our listeners, a link to purchase the book, if you don't have it already, is linked in the show notes. So make sure and go check it out.
Oh, thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate it. That's really the goal, is I just wanted to, you know, when people are reading it, to hear me just advising them. And I wanted it to feel like they could do little bits when they're ready. They could learn some new things. But most importantly, what are you going to do with it? Because I think education without action is a big old waste of time. And my trademarked phrase on my homepage of my website is literally awareness is great, action is better, for that reason. 100%. And I have to thank my husband for that one. I joke with people that I canoodle with my CMO because he works in product marketing in the technology industry, but I get his services for free.
That's amazing. That's so amazing. I love it. I love
not
it.
For free. Like I pay him with companionship, kindness, respect, and all the other things in marriage. But I deeply appreciate how much he understands my message.
I love that. That is amazing. That's special.
Ugh. Yeah, he's a good dude. He gets it. And when the book came out, he actually took a copy and got it like framed, and it's open to like a certain page that he really likes. And I got it and I was like, oh my God, look at these arts and crafts skills. And he said, the people at Michaels helped me. So I thought it was
the people
wonderful.
Of Michaels.
Yes. The people of Michaels, the arts and crafts store.
Yes. You know, it's so funny, like the feedback you get from your spouse, your significant other, like, I love what you're hearing. Mine is so funny, Melissa, because my husband comes from a construction background. He now works for a construction and software company, mm-hmm. which is a fun and interesting pivot he took. But construction background is notorious for being a little bit coarser. And not so warm and fuzzy. And every once in a while, he'll be telling me a story and he'll be like, and then I thought about trauma and I thought about the right way to respond about this. And he's like, and you've just ruined everything for me, Stephanie. I'm a better person now.
Oh my God. I have the exact same conversations with Matt where he's like, well, you know, and I had this conversation at work and then I thought about this and I phrased it like this. I was like, oh, I wonder who taught you that. And then he smiles. He's like, yeah.
It's no, so fulfilling. It shouldn't be, but it is.
He's never fought, you know, what I'm trying to do. And he's always been very, very supportive. And he's a VP at his company. And he is one of those people who walks the walk. And to be fair, so does the CEO of his company. And their head of HR, Ryan May McAvoy, or Ryan May Pepin. Shout out to Ryan May. Talk about one of the most passionate HR professionals who has deep care for mental health at work. And so I feel very fortunate as his spouse that he works for an organization that is actually walking the walk and not just saying mental health is important. And from the positions that matter, you know, from the head of HR and the CEO and other, you know, leaders in the business. I feel very fortunate as his partner that to know he's in an organization like that, because not all companies are like that.
It's so true. And I think there's a lot of talking the talk and not walking the walk. And I love that you brought this up because, you know, we talk about how our jobs impact our own mental health, our team's mental health. They also impact our families and our loved ones outside of the workplace, because what we're bringing home with us from work, whether it's physically from an office or remotely, it has an impact. So when organizations invest in this work, and I even say, hey, if you are one of the very lucky souls who has not been personally impacted by trauma, you know someone, you care about someone who has. So you can still realize benefits from being trauma informed. These are things that benefit all of us. So amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Honestly, it's you don't have to completely relate to and understand what someone is going through to be supportive or have a general, even theoretical idea of what that is and how you can be helpful.
One of my biggest, we're kind of dancing around it a little bit, and it's one Tell of me. My biggest hot buttons. And it's, you know, I'm a big believer that managers, frontline managers, mid-level managers, whatever you want to call them, they have really, really difficult jobs. And they've only gotten exponentially more difficult over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. And I think one thing that I hear when I have one-on-one conversations with folks is I think managers do care. They want to do the right thing when it comes to supporting their team, supporting mental health. I think they're really afraid of getting conversations around mental health, around trauma wrong. And instead of, you know, trying to figure out what to do, a lot of times they just shift away and avoid the conversation altogether. What are your thoughts on that? Or, you know, how do we shift away from this avoidance from frontline managers?
It's funny. How do we shift away from the avoidance?
Well,
this is actually what my whole third LinkedIn learning course is about, is the emotional toll and stress of being a leader. And whenever there's new skills for mental health at work, overwhelmingly, if not all of the time, it's aimed at what should leaders do?
Right.
And I go, well, wait a minute, I'll get to your question, but wait a minute. What about all the other chronologically aged adults who are individual contributors who also are participating in this conversation, and how they come to it, how they share, how they support others? What about them? What about upskilling them? Yes, obviously, people leaders, that is a critically impactful inflection point within a business, but it's not the only one. And so I sympathize. I understand why leaders are so afraid to say the wrong thing, because when you're in a leadership position, there are additional compliance guidelines that you have to adhere to because you have people reporting to you. This is literally why I launched a deliverable with an employment attorney just a few weeks ago about the conversational and legal approaches to these conversations, because a lot of businesses are like, oh, yes, it's important, but do we have to do a training on it? I go, yes, because you can't have people be afraid to do the wrong thing, and so they avoid it and they say nothing. Mm-hmm. So knowledge is power, instead of just avoiding it, because it is not a sustainable strategy. It may have felt that way for the past half a century, not no mo. People are not willing to put up with it anymore. And so when it comes to my solution to that, is really what we've already discussed. It's acknowledging, yes, it's scary. Yes, it's stressful. Yes, it's a gray area, but you know how we're going to solve that is education and training. That's how we're going to do it. And so that's the approach I tend to take, and also that you've taken, you know, with your workshops and your certification course and you know, the stuff that I've released and, you know, some other secret things coming out early next year. So stay tuned. But that to me is the answer, is to not just immediately jump into the training, but to explore the fears. Tell me what you're concerned about. What are you worried about that's going to happen? How can we address this? What are the things that are not in your remit as a manager? What are the things that are in your remit as a manager? So I think the solve, I mean, there's no perfect solve, but the solve is education and training, and giving them the space to talk about why they're concerned to take on this new skill, which no generation of leaders before them was ever expected to do.
It's completely true. No other generation of managers has been asked to do this. No. And I would say this is the beginning of the generation of managers that's been asked to do this. And as an HR leader that did this, it is emotionally taxing. Mm-hmm. And without the right, like you said, education and support, oh, mama, we're in a bad spot. And then as an HR employee that also would go, I'm an employee too. Those managers have mental health too. So when we just drop and say, oh, deal with your employees' mental health. Good luck with that. Don't tell us you're afraid to talk about mental health, which seems opposite time. Like we're just creating another problem in a different demographic.
That 100%. And I beat this drum constantly. And I know that you've seen it a lot on my LinkedIn feed. And I also talked about it at Transform, where I was saying, you know, a lot of times that people leaders will feel like they have to be the savior, the martyr, you know, to fix mental health for their teams. And that's just not the case. a good manager when it comes to mental health at work knows how to have the conversation and knows how to redirect it when they're not the best person to have it with them.
Also, yeah. I love what you said about managers. Like, we can't always let this fall to managers. We can't always mm-hmm. focus just on managers. If we do have folks who are individual contributors or thinking about how they can support their full team as we look at building a more mental health thoughtful workplace, you know, what do you suggest for folks who want to advocate or folks who want to be thoughtful about their own mental health, others' mental health at work, even if they are not in a people manager or leadership role?
Well, I think that good leadership on that stuff can come from anywhere, regardless of tenure and position. So if, you know, you're not in a people leader position, it doesn't mean you can't make an impact. So there are a lot of different ways to do this. You know, you can, and again, this depends on the company you work for, the culture that's there, the manager you work for, the culture in your team. There are lots of factors for you to take into account based on how you want to apply what I'm about to say. So when it comes to making an impact there, a lot of it comes from people tend to do what they see other people doing and doing well and with confidence. I love Cialdini's Laws of Influence. I think it's a wonderful model to apply when thinking about this sort of thing. That talking about mental health struggles as if you've nothing to be ashamed of, because it's a healthy, mature adult practice to talk about how you're struggling. And here's the kicker, what you're going to do to manage it. Because oftentimes when people talk about the struggle, but they don't talk about what they're going to do about it, that is often what makes people either feel like they don't know how to respond, they don't know what the person needs, they don't know what they're supposed to do with this information. I think that that's a big piece of it, is role modeling, just not lying if you're struggling, but also what you need and what you're going to do about it. That can be really inspiring to other people who are maybe nervous to do that. But let's say, for example, you do it and someone says something stupid because, you know, people. It's also another teachable moment opportunity. Like, let's say, you know, I disclose something like that, you know, that you and I were colleagues and you're like, ooh, keep that to yourself. And let's just say like, oh, I'm having like just a kind of a down day. I feel like I'm really struggling to like, you know, get myself centered, whatever. And you responded in a very non-empathetic, dispassionate way. I would say, well, me talking about struggling and what I'm planning to do about that is a pretty emotionally intelligent practice to make sure that I can function and do my job. So if that made you uncomfortable, you know, I'm not going to assume why, but I think that is a pretty decent way to make sure I take care of myself and I don't, you know, shirk my responsibilities, et cetera, et cetera. Because you'll notice I'm saying why I did what I did. I'm not assuming why you reacted. It invites a conversation and also gently lets that person know, ooh, you said the wrong thing, but I'm not going to be terrible to you about it.
Yeah. I love that. You said the wrong thing, but I'm not going to be terrible to you about it.
And I think it's also depending on, you know, what's going on in the wider organization about mental health campaigns. You know, there's opportunities to share stories. There are opportunities to help create or join an ERG. But also a lot of this stuff tends to be on top of your day job. But also just making yourself seem openly available to support people, because how would people know that it's safe to approach you to talk about mental health if you've given them no reason or indication to think so? Or if you don't, if, for example, you notice someone is struggling, it could be anything. And it's as simple as, hey, I hope it's okay I'm bringing this up. You don't seem like yourself, you know, this week. You don't have to tell me what's going on, but in case, you know, you want to talk or make time at the end of the day, just let me know. Option without obligation. Because if we've never talked about it before, or they don't know why I'm bringing it up, those steps matter. And so give them the option, see how they respond. And even if they don't want to, there can be a positive impact that they know that you cared to check in on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I love the example you provided too about kind of sharing, hey, I'm having a tough mental health day. Here's what I'm going to do to manage it. Because I think so often when we're talking about mental health, whether it's mental health at work or just kind of at a societal level, we talk about mental health. Really, we're talking about mental illness and mental health emergencies more often than we're talking about proactive general care mental health, for our mental health and talking about mental health in a way where it's like, just like physical health, we all have mental health. So I love that example because so often when we talk about mental health in the workplace, it's like, well, here's access to therapy. Here's the EAP. If someone is suicidal, here's what to do. And it's like, those are great things to know. Those are great resources, but there is so much more to mental health and mental health at work than that.
Yeah. And it's, I tend to correct my clients frequently in a nice way where I go, we're not just trying to get people to talk about their bipolar. We're trying to get people to talk about the full range of mental health and emotions, which also includes the crappy ones. Did Inside Out teach us nothing? And Inside Out too. I mean, the feeling wheel from Dr. Gloria Wilcox literally shows us that like half of the emotions we're pre-programmed with out of the box, they're not so positive. So I'm always trying to, when I say mental health at work, I'm really talking about mental health, not just mental illness at work. It's both.
Yes.
And so I always gently correct my clients. I'm like, hey, this isn't just condition-based. It's also just talking about the challenges of life and what comes with that.
So you hinted at this a little bit, and I'm very excited to talk about it because I think it is just so needed and so cool and interesting. I would love if you could share more about your new program, The Right Stuff Program, Conversational and Legal Approaches to Mental Health at Work. Because as a former HR professional, I'm like compliance hat, mental health hat, like, it's tricky. So I'm super excited to know more about this.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. As I was naming this program with my, the person I've partnered with, I might've started shuffling to The Right Stuff from New Kids on the Block.
I did it in my head as I said that, just so you know. It's like back there dancing around right now.
So yeah, that might have been the little joke that went into naming the program because, you know, why not? The reason, so her name is Kelly Lawrence, and she's a partner at the Baird-Holm Law Firm in Omaha. And I actually did an event with Kelly for HR group a number of years ago. I was like, oh my God, I found an attorney who's funny and can translate legalese into easily understandable information. She is a unicorn. And so I always thought there could be something there. And then I think it was last year, I was like, there's nothing like this that's available. It is rare to see when organizations are doing mental health disclosure compliance training at all. And oftentimes on its own, it can feel kind of overwhelming and scary. So I think there's an opportunity for us to team up to basically show how these things relate to each other. What is the difference between what is literally illegal and not? What is the ethical thing to do? What is the empathetic thing to do? How do these all, you know, intersect with each other? And so that really is the goal, is to help people understand that not every conversation needs to go to HR. Asking someone just how they're doing is not the same as, do you have PTSD? Those are not the same. And so helping people understand, what are we actually talking about? What does the law say? What do good management practices say? You know, where do these things intersect? What do you need to be aware of? What are you over worrying about? And having literally a former therapist who now does org psych and an employment attorney who talks about the legal side of mental health at work together so people can ask those questions together. I thought, I think this is what the market needs. And so we launched it, and we've already had several inquiries from clients. Because honestly, I see this as a deliverable that should be part of core leadership development.
Yes.
That's genuinely how I feel. And so it's very interactive. It's 90 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how much people can tolerate. But Kelly and I, we keep it light. I mean, gosh, look at the name of the program. And it's multiple formats included within the deliverable, where it's like part keynote, part mutual fireside, part case vignettes, part action planning, you know, part Q&A. There's a lot of stuff mixed in because people learn in different ways. And so we want to have a little something for everybody. And we want people to see the guardrails and also the spectrum of this from two people from two different sides of the fence together in the same place. So that is what we put out into the world. And so far the response has been really positive.
It's amazing. I am not surprised. That sounds so incredible. Cause getting back to what I said earlier, people are scared to have these conversations. Well, part of the reason they might be scared is legal compliance risks. This is kind of a off the cuff question, but what do you think's the biggest surprise people are the most surprised by in those conversations?
In terms of the legal aspect?
Yes.
That asking how someone is doing and how they're feeling is not illegal. Seriously. That is the surprise, where they equate asking about someone's general emotional state with inquiring if they have a condition. Yeah.
It's eye-opening. Yeah.
No. I was like, y'all, they're even different words. Like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Is not the same as you seem depressed. Those are not the same. And I shouldn't laugh, but it's shocking because there's such a fear that anything touching a feeling word is a no-go. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, there are certain countries around the world where asking about someone's emotional state does need to be phrased in a very particular way, or it is illegal. Mm-hmm. But again, that's like two sides of the same coin. So it's really just knowledge is power. You will be less afraid when you know the right thing. Which is why we call it the right stuff. People are going to watch this podcast and be like, what is happening?
I should have practiced my little dance.
Is this what
I would put the song on, but I feel like I'd get a copyright infringement.
No, we're not doing that.
We are. Mm-hmm. I love it. I also, you know, I want to highlight, so you focus your work on something you call mental health at work conversational literacy.
No, very tell sexy.
I'm over here on the trauma informed workplace podcast. I'm very literal. So right there with you. So tell us what that is and why you advocate for it.
Oh gosh. And why I waited 15 months for that dang trademark to come through. The wait for those has like doubled and tripled in the last few years. And so I'm always checking out my trademark return. I'm like, anything? No. So the reason I did that is because I truly feel, as I was saying earlier, it is a language we all need to know how to speak. It is a form of conversation that we all need to know how to have to some degree at some point in our career. And it is a literacy, a skill level to develop. And so I think that I spend so much time correcting people for my work, because when they use the term wellness, for example, which unfortunately has become a very amorphous, ambiguous, difficult term to action. And I don't see mental health or conversational literacy as like a mental wellness thing. I see it as a professional development endeavor, teaching people the language, the approaches, the consideration, the education they need to have this interpersonal communication skill. So that is how I've really couched my whole business. And granted, I started a business at a great time, December of 2019. Nothing happened the next year. Things were fine. But actually, the timing was very sadly serendipitous.
Yes.
Because it was at a time when people needed it with the message they needed. But listen, I will even say, I, just like a lot of people at that time, were focusing on mental health is important. We need to talk about this. But then I realized I was also part of the problem, that I wasn't giving people the solutions, and I wasn't giving people the actions, the examples they needed. So I was like, well, I need to not be part of this this continuing solely education building, which granted, in a lot of places around the world, we are still in an education building phase. We are not at a conversational literacy phase because they are not ready for ABCDEFG reasons. That is very true. But in the cultures that are, in the businesses that are, in the geographic locations that are, it's when the awareness has been built, the stigma has been hopefully reduced a little bit, then it comes to taking action. And so that is why I really try and put some legs under it and make it concrete and to make it very action oriented and to say to people, what are you going to do with what I'm giving you? Because if you're not having the conversations, we're wasting our time. And so that's really the whole concept is, you know, once the education's done, it's time to become literate in the process. And I haven't lost anybody yet. So
I love it. The actionable, I think, is so important. And I think that's something that I learned over the course of my career. HR, you do a lot of stuff. You throw a lot of spaghetti at the walls. You do a lot of the things you're supposed to do. And a lot of the feedback you get is, okay, great. Now I've got another thing from HR to do. And really sitting with that feedback, some of it, you know, more legitimate than others, is so important because it's like, yeah, how can I make this work? Actionable. Yeah. Even if it's tiny actions, even if it's small little baby steps, I mean, yeah. A world where workplaces are trauma informed is a big old hairy goal. And I know that. And I think people who are, you know, excited about the work I do know that as well. Mm-hmm. I think the important thing is remembering those little changes that we make.
Oh, yeah.
Are hugely impactful. And it's worthwhile to keep doing that. Same thing with mental health.
Well, it's really the opposite of death by a thousand cuts. It's a thousand little moments that will turn into having these conversations and education that are just embedded into workplace culture. But also, and I'm sure you remember, and as I was writing this, I was like clenching my butt as I was like writing these words for my book. I was like, ooh, this is going to upset some people, but I have to say, send. The part where you got to know what we're talking about to also know when people are abusing it.
Yes. Yes.
Where I wrote the section in the book, I was like, let's not use mental health as an excuse for shitting the bed at work. And, you know, the same thing goes with being trauma-informed. Like, it is one thing to be informed about this topic. It's another, you know, it's another thing to have certain people who then bandwagon and use the buzzwords when how they've performed at work, how they've acted at work, have nothing to do with trauma, nothing to do with mental health struggles. But because depending on what you say can be a protected phrase, there are all the wonderful things about providing this education in the workplace. And there's also how it can be abused. I've seen it.
Yes.
And so it's not something you're supposed to say because it's like the dark side of what we do, but, you know, come to the dark side, but, you know, it's the truth of the 8 billion people on the planet. You can't say these things don't happen. They do. Yeah. And in those situations, it makes you upset because it detracts from the cause. And yes. Typically, we are creatures who are wired for negativity. I know managers who will not come close to these topics because they did in the past and people made them regret it.
Yes. I call it, this is not glamorous, but I've kind of likened it to, there's always someone who's going to just like take their own poop and smear it on the wall. Like they don't have any purpose to it. It is not helpful. It is just like, they're just smearing poop on the wall. And it is unpleasant for everybody, but it's also like, I go back to a lot like what you're saying, go back to, what are we trying to do here? Is this the exception? Are we holding people, like, people are always like, oh, accountability. How do I hold people accountable and also do mental health and trauma-informed and empathy? And like, you have to hold people accountable. Otherwise you aren't doing those things.
Well, there's a difference between being empathetic to people's struggles. You know, people don't choose to have a mental illness. They don't choose to have terrible shit happen to them, but they choose how to manage it, provided they have access to resources and can afford to use them and are willing to do so.
Right.
That's the difference. So can't hold people hostage like that.
Exactly. And one that comes up for me frequently is, you know, there's the old catchphrase, hurt people. Mm-hmm. And when you think about trauma and how trauma affects individuals and trauma responses, there is a very, I, the same hot button as you, because one of the first things I looked for as I was doing this work was, how is someone going to misuse this? And that's one of the first things I thought of was, well, I have trauma in my past, so that's why I'm a shitty asshole leader. Not an excuse. It's not an excuse.
I get it.
It doesn't work.
You're on Instagram, right?
Yes.
I don't think we follow each other. We have to. And I saw something. I literally sent it to my husband today. Did you see The Dark Knight that had Heath Ledger before he passed away when he played the Joker?
Yes.
And he dressed up as the nurse with the makeup. And the caption was, it was like a husband and wife situation. I know this is different than the workplace, where it's that scene where he walks into the hospital to see Harvey Dent and he goes, hi. And the caption is me going back to my husband after having an off the rails trigger response to something he said to like take responsibility. And I sent it to him and I did like the little angel emoji. Like I've never done that. I think there's power in that when you think about trauma in the workplace. Like if you have a trigger response, the most important thing you can do is take responsibility.
Yes.
And that can give someone a really positive experience of seeing what it's like for someone who struggles with trauma, but also makes the effort to manage it.
I want to be, you know, mindful of our time. Yeah. And I also want to make sure, you know, obviously I think you're fantastic.
You're fantastic.
So for folks who want to keep up with the work you're doing, maybe engage with some of the amazing things you have going on, purchase your book, how can folks reach out to you if they'd like to take advantage of your services, or where can they follow you if they want to stay up to date?
I really appreciate you asking that. And you're also amazing. I feel like there's stuff in our future together as well with how complimentary our things are. Website is a very complicated URL. It's melissadoman.com. If you would like to reach out to inquire about, you know, different services and how I can help your organization or conference or summit. I'm also on LinkedIn, just listed, you know, as Melissa Doman. And on Instagram, I am at the Wandering Mel, because I love to travel and I don't tend to separate business from personal. So it's all in one account. Please reach out. I would love to help. And those who tend to want to engage in this work with me are the ones who are ready to do the work and not just check the box. So if I can help your business, please reach out. As for my book, which my husband literally forced to put behind me on calls, by the way. I was like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to be one of those authors who are like, hey, you know, I wrote a book. Hey, do you know I wrote a book?
If I ever write a book, I'm going to wear a shirt that says, hey, I wrote a book.
Oh my, no, it makes me so twitchy. But he was like, he bullied me into it. And anyway, it's available across all major online retailers. The quickest way to get it is Amazon. If you have ethical problems with Jeff Bezos, you can always get it with Barnes & Noble. And I think that is it. And next year, I am launching a very, very special program just for leaders. Woo-hoo. And it's going to be a very intense one. So it'll be announced in October, but it'll be available in January. So amazing. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. So excited. Melissa, thank you so much for your time and you. For the work you're doing. Folks who listened in, thank you so much for joining us. Melissa's book, her website, her socials are linked in the podcast notes. And until next time, be well.